Who wants to live in a single family house when you can have all the amenities in these resort communities now? I don't know. So that's how you just have to believe that it's going to get better. Insurance will come down. Interest rates will come down. You just don't know when. But when they do, I mean, just a 100 basis point decrease in cap rate is massive to value. Massive.
Let's get ready to scale. Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of Ready to Scale. I'm your host, Jeanette Friedrich, Director of Investor Relations at Blue Lake Capital. Joining me today is Ken Gee. Ken is the founder and president at KRI Partners. It's a real estate private equity firm. He has more than 24 years of experience in real estate, banking, private equity transactions, and principal investing. Throughout his career, he has been involved in transactions valued at more than $2 billion. He has a portfolio, at least since inception, of over 16,000 units. He has a BBA in banking, corporate finance, and securities law, and a master's in accounting. In addition to this overachievement already, Ken is a CPA, licensed real estate broker, and has also worked as a commercial loan officer back in the day. He's joining us today from Greater Cleveland, Ohio. So, Ken, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just dive right on in. So what I thought was really interesting when I was looking, at your information and reading through about your company is that you focus on properties in Florida and then Ohio. And I was like, wow, okay, that's not your, you don't see that.
Who does that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, my first question to you is, I'm very curious. I can see the appeal of Florida. I can actually see the appeal of Ohio as well. But again, just kind of a strange combo. So what are the similarities and differences between these two markets?
Yeah, so let me just tell you how that happened, first of all.
Okay.
A long time ago, 25, 26 years ago, I started this company and it started in Cleveland. So for the first 10 years or so, we did our own deals. We didn't raise any external money. And we kind of grew up in Cleveland. And then, we did very well in Cleveland. But then we just realized, wait a minute, what if we actually went to a place people wanted to live? Think about how well we would do there. So 15 years ago, we made that migration. And so believe it or not, now we don't do anything anymore in Cleveland. I still live here. Our back office is here because it was so well developed. There's no way I was going to start that all over again. And so now all we do is own and manage in Florida. So that's kind of how that happened. The markets, boy, they're very different. No question about that. I mean, Cleveland is a, I always think of markets in terms of demand and supply, right? Cleveland is definitely not a demand exceed supply state for sure. There might be some submarkets in Ohio that do that, but it's not Cleveland. So, it was actually good training ground right out of the gate because we had to really work hard to fill our properties and move rents and things like that. So it was actually a good way to learn. So now we go to Florida and it's completely the opposite. I mean, demand far exceeds supply for housing. And so it's a whole lot easier. So, I would say in terms of operating the properties, it's a lot easier in Florida than it is in Cleveland. They all have their challenges. Probably the biggest difference when you think about a capital raising, right? You're in charge of investor relations. Mm-hmm. If you think about capital raising, I just think about the conversation. Hi, I got this great deal in Cleveland. You want to invest? Or, hey, I have this great deal in Tampa. You want to invest? The response just right out of the gate is completely different. So
yeah, no doubt.
We could go on for an hour on the differences, but suffice it to say, there's a reason we don't do deals in Cleveland anymore. I cannot do in Cleveland what I can do in Florida.
No, and that makes perfect sense. Now, I do have to say, historically, we have had properties in Florida, but of course, I'm going to go here. Commercial insurance. I mean, it's just it kills deals left and right. So I'm curious to know how you're overcoming those challenges with both your current portfolio and then whenever you're trying to even make a deal pencil.
Yeah, those are really good questions. So let's talk about our current portfolio. When we buy, we really insist on significant upside, like a lot. We're talking $200-$400 a month in upside in rents. And we're pretty good at implementing that. We're usually able to get it in the first year, 2 years. And the reason we're able to be okay is because of all that new income to pay all that new insurance cost. So we're fine, right? I've always told people in our business, our job is to not lose the real estate when things get really tough because it'll come back, right? We just need the cycle to play itself out. Now, I will tell you, I will buy everything I can find right now because rates are relatively high. Excuse me, insurance is relatively high and people that have to sell have to sell. And they, you know, the banks hold the line on what they're willing to lend. So it kind of forces the pricing to be in line with where it's at. So anything I can buy now, as long as it's in a good neighborhood, we'll buy because I just, you know, I can't guarantee interest rates are coming down. I can't guarantee insurance rates are coming down, but I kind of feel like they are going to do that eventually. So if I can buy anything and, you know, imagine if you can get a decent asset now in the mid to upper fives cap rate. I mean, you would kill for that even a year ago, right? So, you know, we think we'll get some cap rate compression. So we think there's a lot of wind to our back. And that's how we get through it.
Interesting. And now, you know, just to make sure we're kind of all on the same page and the listeners as well, I assume that we're talking about going in and doing value add with multifamily properties. That's specifically the strategy that you're using.
We do. We're looking for some value add in some way. And that value add is defined as what we think is upside in rents. So sometimes it's physical improvement. Sometimes it's just managing the property. I mean, one of our best deals, my renovation budget was $50,000. 8 years later, we've moved rent, you know, $650 a month.
Wow. I mean,
so it's just value. You're just looking for that upside in rent. And you don't always have to spend the money to get it.
Yeah, that's definitely very true. Now, I'm curious, you know, back to kind of focusing on the you know, increase in expenses for, you know, insurance. Mm-hmm. What about your return profile? How badly does that impact your return profile? And basically, you know, are you able to get investors to weather the kind of pinch early on in order for the gain longer term? How does that look?
Yeah. So when you think about, excuse me, our goal is to distribute 6%, 4-6%. And we're able to do that because let's just think about 100 units, you add $2,000 or $200 a month in rent, right? That's $24,000. Is that right? Yeah, $24,000 a month times 12. I mean, that's a lot of new cash flow, a lot to absorb those rent increases. So we're still able, the discipline here is going in as close to even leverage as you can get. And then having that $200-$300 in upside, because if you're close to even leverage going in, your cash distribution is going to sustain itself as long as your rent increases are able to offset if you've had massive insurance and other expense increases. So we're just able to do that. The people that are struggling right now are people that are in two situations. One, they didn't manage their debt, right? Mm-hmm. They just didn't think rates would move. They did. They didn't protect themselves or the cap rates expiring on them. So it's that sort of person that is in trouble right now. The other person that's struggling right now is the person who thought they could get some upside, but really didn't understand the market and really kind of just missed the mark there. So they have a deal that's predicated on all this upside that they're now not getting. So now they don't have that cash flow to absorb that new expense. They're in trouble. So those are the two people that are in trouble right now. And it's really, I mean, as rates, you know, I don't know when this is actually going to air, but as the date of this recording, I mean, rent or interest rates, they're up there. I mean, they're at 4.67, I think, on the 7-year, just I saw it today. And that's high compared to where it's been. So those people are in trouble. And that's why most of the people that are in trouble right now. Most of the properties, at least in our markets, the properties themselves are not distressed. It's the sellers that are distressed.
Yeah, correct. I would say that that's probably a very accurate statement across multiple markets in the United States right now. It's not really that the assets are distressed. It's the operators that are distressed. And that's the opportunity, right, for, you know, for sponsors like you and us, you know, and that's exactly what we're looking for. Yeah,
that's exactly right. He who, I don't know if you syndicate or we do blind pool funds. So we raise the money first. And that's why we can get deals now, right?
We do have, we have two funds, but we do syndicate our deals as well. We're trying to move more to the model of having the fund in place ahead of time, because, you know, of course, you know, fortune, you know, favors the prepared, and, you know, we're trying to get everybody on board with that, but it is a process because we have originally and historically always syndicated. So, you know, we're working towards that. But very interesting. And so, you know, now I didn't even plan on going in this direction, but here we go. So, you know, a blind pool, that's pretty challenging to be able to, you know, bring investors into something blind in that regard. So what are some of the kind of, you know, what would you say are some of the best practices or strategies that you've implemented to do these types of races?
I think the biggest thing is your track record. And it's not just, not just a track record of acquiring assets. It's going full cycle and turning and showing them that what you do and that you can do it successfully, not just a couple of times, but over and over and over again. And so after a while, you know, I think we've done 19 deals. We've turned 15 of them or 14 of them. I can't remember now, but we've turned a great number of deals. And when you can show that kind of track record, and we actually have, I don't know if you've ever heard of Verivest.
Sure.
Verivest was a company. That we had them in. They don't do it anymore, but we had them in to audit all of our track record, because being the CPA that I was, I recognize that that might be valuable to an investor who Ken says, hey, these are my returns. Yeah, sure, Ken. Well, why should I believe you? Well, we had someone come in, paid them a lot of money, and they audited everything. And so that is, I think, the key to raising a blind pool fund, because when an investor invests in a blind pool fund, they're blind.
Yeah.
Trust me, give me your money and I'll do the right thing. This is what I've done in the past. This is what I'm going to do in the future. And when I really boil it down, there's not a huge difference between syndicating and there shouldn't be, and in raising a blind pool fund, because the reality of it is the investor, the big risk here is execution risk, right? What we just talked about, interest rates going up, insurance going up, you know, operating this asset in a way that's going to be profitable. So that is the biggest trust factor. And that really is in play in both a syndication and a blind pool fund. You got to take a minute and help investors realize that. But I think that is huge, because that's most of the risk, right?
Oh,
they're
absolutely
not probably going to stand next to you and underwrite the syndicated deal. They're just going to get a chance to look at the pretty building and say, yes, I agree, that's a pretty building. Most of them won't underwrite right next to you. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's really not as hard as you think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. It really is the trust factor of who, what sponsor, what operator are, do you have confidence in and do you trust? And that really is the key, because, you know, a bad operator can easily kill a good deal. No doubt about it.
And it's going on right now. We see it.
Yeah.
And those of us with experience are actually, unfortunately for the investors, you know, it's hurting them, but it actually, when you have that experience and you're not having those things happen to you, it actually benefits you in a big way, because, you know, it's sort of that cream rises to the top during difficult times. That's unfortunate for some, but it's really important for us, because people now recognize, okay, now I see why those things were so important. I like investors that follow four rules, and that is number one, you got to make sure that they have experience. Number two, they got to have a track record of full cycle terms, like I talked about. They got to be transparent, and they got to put you first.
Absolutely.
Right. And if they follow those four rules, they're in good shape. Usually, if things struggle, they broke at least one or two of those rules. The investor.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And it's interesting, I think, too, to see, you know, because there was a lot of excitement and buzz the last, you know, I would say probably 5-6 years or so, a lot of people getting into the game and, you know, and very quickly, I'm noticing that it's thinning out significantly. And I do actually think that is to investors' benefits. It may be a short-term pain for more of a long-term gain, as far as being able to distinguish between operators that really have the experience and frankly, even the financial standing to be, you know, operating at these levels versus those that don't. So I think that this is a painful but very beneficial process, if you will, cleansing, if you will, that's going through the industry right now.
Yeah, good word. I like that, cleansing.
It's a cleansing.
That's a good way to describe it. I like that.
Yeah. All right. So now let's talk about acquisitions and looking at deals in today's market. So kind of back to my original question, you know, when you're underwriting, I know that you said you're looking for, you know, really conservative leverage. You're looking for those bump rents, but we're also dealing with some challenges where there is some softening of rents in the market. Are you seeing that in Florida as well? And is that impacting your ability to make deals pencil?
Yeah. So, no, it's not the softening of rents that's making deals hard to pencil right now. The reason we're having trouble getting deals now is we have sellers that need this. We have buyers, i.e. us, that can't pay that, right? And then, whoops, there we go. Interest rates is what's screwing that up. Mm-hmm. So that's what's really hurting it. We're not. So when we project rent increases, we know, because we're really thorough in our rent analysis, that on day one, we should probably be able to get pretty close to what we projected the rents to be. So it's that gap initially, right? So that even if rents are soft right now, okay, maybe the gap, we thought it was 200, maybe it's 170. Okay, that still is not a bad right. thing for your business plan. What's happening is, so we have that mark, just call it the adjustment, right? I call it gapping up. There's something wrong, that they're below market for some reason. So once we get it to there, right now, yes, things are flat. When we have leases rolling over right now, they're generally flat renewals. We're still recovering lost a lease that was in place, but the new market rents are generally flat. We have a little bit of retracement in a couple of the softer markets, like maybe Tallahassee or maybe Daytona. Excuse me, but in the stronger markets, we're not having that.
Interesting, interesting. Very interesting, actually. So I'm curious too, when it comes to how you are doing your underwriting and coming up with these projected, you know, rental premiums and everything else, you know, how are you doing that? Are you still sticking to some old school best practices? Yeah. Have you started implementing AI? Well, you know, how are you doing it on your end?
Yeah, we haven't done AI yet. We're probably a little late to the game there, but the reality of it is, you know, everybody tries to use CoStar and Yardi Matrix and use their numbers, but their numbers are always massively wrong. And it's not because they're poor services. It's because their numbers are a month old. Mm-hmm. And with most, you know, newer properties being on LRO, which, remember, that's the daily pricing model. For those of you who don't know, I mean, today, you just a day, you miss a lot. I mean, you can miss 100, 150 bucks in a day or two. So yeah. Those rents tend to not hold up when you run those services. So what we do is we do the painful work. I mean, we go and we analyze, you know, the properties within a mile, within 2 miles, and then we'll pay attention to things like, you know, is water sewer included? Is it separately billed? Do they have LA trash? Do they have washer dryers in the units versus, you know, we take what we think are the major factors that a prospective renter would look at, and then we try to build out that market. So we'll look at where's the property now and compared to its peers. And then when we do whatever it is that we're going to do, let's say we're going to improve the amenities, then we're going to move it up a tier. So we're going to look at that little tier and say, okay, where's this property now going to fit? And that helps us understand based on today. So we're going to go out. We do this mostly on the web, and then we follow it up with in-person visits. But everybody's web rents are on their website, right? They just change from day to day. So we'll go through and look at this tier, the as-is comp. That's what most people do. We look at the next tier up. We want to understand the next tier down as well. And then we always go to the very top of the market, because you got to think like a prospective renter. If you're going to live in an area and you can live in a brand new place for $100 more, there's a pretty good chance you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. But if it costs you $600, well, maybe not so much, right? That's enough to matter to most renters. So they'll make those decisions. So what you see us trying to do is really understand how that market is playing out. And then, of course, we got to look at supply additions and things like that in Florida, because they're building everywhere. And so, you know, we'll just assume, well, what happens if that top of the market really softens, right? Because that's where it usually softens first. And so when that happens, do I still have a big enough gap? And so we just try to understand that and then be conservative about what we think we can do with our rents. And then when the units turn, what we don't do is jack someone's rent $200-$300 at a time. We just don't do that. You don't need to do that. They're going to move. So you'll collect probably at most half of the loss of lease in year one. And many of that'll be enough in most cases to make people move. Then you can go get the rest of it with a brand new lease from a brand new prospect who doesn't feel that pain of the increase, right? They're paying market rent. So that's kind of how the process goes. It's still a little painful for us, but I'm not ready to just blindly trust AI yet and do something like that, because we're just not there yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, we probably could be in the next, you know, couple of years, I'm sure.
We actually implement the trust but verify, you know, strategy. So we do utilize AI, and we have actually been utilizing AI for several years now, actually. I think we were probably one of the first to start doing it. And it's been very, very helpful. We've had some really strong returns, and, you know, it's been good for the portfolio and for our investors. But we also still implement the exact same approach that you do. You know, and it's funny, I mean, just to give people some color into the background, you know, of how this works, we will literally rotate amongst team members, calling and pretending to be, you know, a prospective tenant, ask all kinds of annoying questions, you know, and try not to seem obvious that we're probably a sponsor that's trying to get comps and you know, trying to figure out, you know, are the utilities baked in or not? Are they using rubs? You know, what does the counter look like? You know, do they have smart plugs? I mean, we literally have to be the most annoying people to ever have to encounter because of how dumb our questions probably get.
Right.
But you know, that's what we do. So we actually utilize the AI data. So we get that data, but we verify that data by implementing the old school approach. And then the truth, we believe, is, you know, somewhere right smack in the middle of all of that, because much to what you said, it can literally change day to day. And sometimes it can even change hour to hour, which is crazy. I think a lot of people don't realize, but, you know, literally you and I can walk in an hour apart from each other into an apartment complex and rent for a totally different price, getting the exact same type of unit. And that's just how it works. So
and I will tell you, that really annoys prospective tenants.
Oh, yeah.
Really annoys them.
Yes, understandably, I will actually
say. I will, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, I actually want to get into talking about supply and then also talking about some of the challenges that you can have with a transient tenant base, which I'm assuming is more common in, you know, certain markets within Florida, of course. But before we do, let's have a word from our sponsor.
Ready to Scale is brought to you by Blue Lake Capital, where we hunt down the best multifamily investment opportunities that we can find and invite investors to join in with us. We target Class B value-add multifamily properties across the Sun Belt. Our CEO, Ellie Perlman, invests a substantial amount of capital into every deal. This means our interests are aligned with yours. If you're an accredited investor looking to expand your portfolio and diversify sponsors, be sure to visit us at bluelake-capital.com. Blue Lake Capital. Be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward.
Okay, so Ken, you know, you touched on it earlier, but I'd like to dig in just a little bit further since, you know, we're really getting into the Florida markets today. You know, supply has definitely been a challenge across multiple markets. I know we've, you know, also had to deal with that, and we've had to, you know, lower our rents, you know, in order to compete against, you know, some of the concessions that new supply is offering until they get leased up. And, you know, but it's just a short-term challenge. But I'm curious to know, you know, how are you dealing with kind of the influx of supply, and how much supply are we talking about, you know, specifically to these markets that you operate in?
Yeah. So some markets are, I mean, like Orlando's just getting destroyed with tons and tons of new supply. We don't have a lot in Orlando. Closest thing we have is Winter Haven, which is closer to Tampa than it is Orlando. We're not terribly affected. We just closed on a new deal out of lease up in St. Pete. We're a little bit affected by that, but this particular property, I mean, there's very little new addition within 3 miles. As you know, that's extremely infill. There's nowhere to build in that area. So it's not affecting us as much as you think. If it does affect us, it's very temporary, just because what happens when you have oversupply, and you know this, but your listeners may not, is that I call it the giant sucking sound. Everybody gets pulled up a notch. The C tenants get to go to the B buildings. The B buildings tenants get to go to the A buildings, because it becomes affordable, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, look, what's really important is that you buy on the way in with enough cash flow that if things get a little soft, you're not going to lose your building. That's all you need to do is be able to wait it out, because builders do this every single cycle. They overbuild. Then they stop building, and then things tighten back up, and then it takes them a while to get that cycle moving again. You just have to wait for that cycle to end. So it is affecting us, but not in a huge way, because we try to manage that gap. It's really important. Even our new deal in St. Pete, if you go live downtown St. Pete, 3 miles away, the rents are $1,200 higher. I mean, that's a huge, huge difference.
That is
so that market has to get really soft for us to really get hurt there. And we just pay attention to that so carefully. So we're not getting hurt by it. There are some people who are getting hurt by it. But again, if you just, as long as you manage your debt, and that's the bigger problem, is people didn't manage their debt properly. As long as you're okay with your debt, then you'll be fine and come right out of it. So although there's a lot of, what I want to do right now is buy. I told you, I want to buy everything in sight now. Because, I mean, who else, when else could you buy a newer asset in the mid to upper fives?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like it's fixed in 2012, you know, 2010 pricing. Yeah, it's great.
That's right.
Thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
Florida's not going to stop growing. At least I don't think it will.
Yeah, well, and that actually is a perfect segue to my next point, which is, you know, a tenant base can, I think, make or break a deal as well. I mean, the operator is crucial. Second to that, you know, I would definitely say it's the strength of the tenant base. You know, on a property. And I would assume that you probably have a lot more transient tenant base in Florida than probably some other markets. I know that several years ago, we had a property in an Atlanta MSA, kind of submarket of Atlanta. And when we were about to acquire the property, word got out, right, that there was new owners coming in. We were just like a couple of weeks away from closing. Oh, and it was right around, I think, 2019. No, it was right around 2020, I think. So, you know, there was basically the election was going on, and, you know, Trump was looking to, you know, likely land up in office. And when word got out that new owners were coming in, there was apparently, you know, a pocket of tenants that were illegal immigrants, and they were terrified that the new ownership would come in, kick them out, they'd get deported, you know. So we literally had like a mass exodus, like overnight, and occupancy dropped. I can't remember exactly the numbers, but I mean, it was like, you know, I think occupancy was maybe 93 or 94%, and it dropped down to like 80% or 85 or something like that, you know, but it was, it took a ding, and it was just a couple of weeks before closing. And not only did they leave overnight, they took appliances with them too. So you know, we had refrigerators missing. We had, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, we scrambled. We were, our CEO, Ellie, went down there and stayed there for 2 weeks, basically breathing down property management's neck. You know, the occupancy backup. And we did actually still close on the deal, and we exited for fabulous return. But, you know, it's just one of those crazy stories of real estate, of course, that is just, it's crazy. So it is one
that
of those.
That is crazy. I've not had that happen to me before. That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah. That, and there's a fire story, but that's another day.
Yeah. Well, most of us have those. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have any more.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, thankfully we got through that, and it turned out to be a great deal. But, you know, there are some interesting challenges that you can have with transient tenant bases. So I'm just curious, you know, what are some of those challenges, and how have you guys over time found good ways of dealing with those?
Yeah. So, we've always expected to turn 40 to 45% of our property a year. That's just what has historically happened. That's not changed. Now, this immigrant thing is actually, especially in Florida, it's not hurt us as much on the occupancy, because there's so many people coming to Florida, right? I mean, it's so, the demand so much exceeds supply. We're still getting what we need. The challenge has been with contractors. I mean, there are contractors who their entire workforce disappeared overnight, and they had to close up shop. They have nobody to work. And so we've had that happen. The landscapers, roofers, I mean, you know, a lot of contractors. And that's where it's really affected us the most. So, you know, you end up, it's always interesting, because you have these longstanding contractors who were not always the cheapest, but they were always there and they were very reliable. Well, guess what? They're back, right? Yeah. They're back in play because they're still there, because they were always more expensive and didn't go to get their labor pool from that group. But that's the biggest impact it has had. So, haven't seen it on the demand side. You know, there's still a lot of people in Florida coming to Florida. So
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm that's very comfortable with that.
I actually was speaking with another podcast guest just a couple of days ago about the influence that geopolitics, you know, can have, even in the national scale. You know, it's interesting because I was sharing with our other guests that only recently have I started to actually see more of a heated divide of, oh, I'm not investing in that. That's too red of a state. That's too close to blue. You know, that's purple. You know, I've kind of gotten some.
Yeah, politics is in everything, it seems like. It's unfortunate.
It is. Yeah. And the group that I was speaking with, they invest only in Texas, which of course has definitely ruffled, you know, some feathers. But we could say the same of Florida also. You know, there's definitely been a lot of waves that have been made, you know, politically from Florida. And so, you know, it's interesting to see how that can actually impact multifamily investments, you know, even down to like a contractor level. So I'm just curious, have there been any additional impacts?
You know, not that we have felt, but I'm always looking for them because you're right. I mean, the politics of Florida has, I don't know that it's changed. Maybe I don't know what the right word is, but there is a real chance that, you know, some groups of people don't want to come to Florida as much as they may be used to, right? That's very possible.
Sure.
But I think what's happening is the demand was so far exceeding the supply that we're still able to rent. You know, I mean, we're still in the low to mid 90s, right? Some properties at 97%. We're just not getting, you know, before for a while there, we were trying to find the top. We couldn't find it. Every time we thought we found it, well, let's try more. And it just kept coming. It's not quite like that now. So, you know, when you have a market that is growing so fast, you know, maybe here's the gap. Well, now it's this. Well, it's all right. Now compare that to Cleveland. It was the other way around, right? I'm like, this is still a cakewalk, right? Because if I can figure out running a property in Cleveland, I can sure figure it out in Florida. So it hasn't hurt us. Probably is the reason for some of the softness. That's probably true.
Interesting.
We'll see. You know, everything always changes. I always feel like this stuff kind of balances itself out over time. It just will. We'll see. It's just when you're in the middle of it, and people are just very, very divided. I wish they weren't so divided. That's unfortunate. But I think it'll come back to center eventually over time.
Yeah, well, good. And actually, before we kind of wrap this up, that was actually going to be my last question for you is, you know, you've been in the industry for a long time. So, you know, you've been through downturns in the market. You know, you've been through the great upswings, right? You've been through a lot of it. So, you know, what would your advice be to, you know, your average multifamily investor that is maybe going through this for the first time?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, you know, when you're in times like if you're operating right now and you have a portfolio right now and it's not, you know, not maybe doing as well as you wanted it to, right? I go back to my 2008, 2009 days. I mean, that was rough. That was really rough. You couldn't refinance a loan to save your life no matter what. Well, it's not like that now. But what happens when you're in those periods? All of a sudden, you can't imagine it being better. I don't know. It's kind of weird how the psyche of a human being works. When you're in a really rough time, you're like, man, I don't know. I don't know if I like this. I hope this can get better, but I don't know. Just like when you're in euphoria, right? When everybody's getting FOMO and, oh my God, I got to get in. I got to get in because they can't imagine it being bad. Right. We're bipolar. Right. And they're the opposite of the way that we should be. Right. We shouldn't be euphoric up here, but we are. And we shouldn't be scared to death down here. You should be exactly the opposite. So that's what I would say to people. Be smart. But, you know, the time to have been conservative was in 2019, 2020. Not now. I mean, you should still be conservative, but you've already had massive negative things happen in this industry. So that's what I would tell people, right? Be conservative, but get in, right? That's why I want to buy everything I can right now. Because I remember this is multifamily. There's a reason I only do multifamily. Because I can't figure out how to make it so you don't need a place to live. If you don't need a place to live, guess what? Our investments are not, we are not thinking about our investments. Right? Because we got much bigger problems than that. Yeah. So we have this thing that won't go away. Right? And so as long as you have something that's not going to go away, it's going to come back. People are going to, as long as you continue, and they're building resorts now, you know that. I mean, who wants to live in a single family house when you can have all the amenities in these resort communities now? I don't know. So that's how you just have to believe that it's going to get better. Insurance will come down. Interest rates will come down. You just don't know when, but when they do, I mean, just a 100 basis point decrease in cap rate is massive mm-hmm. to value, massive. So that's what I would tell people: get in, don't, and just be smart about who you're investing with. That's nothing against beginners, right? We have a whole investor education platform, and we're helping people figure this out. But we're doing it because we want them to do it right and not lose money. That's mm-hmm. what's important. So just be smart about who you're investing with, and I think you'd be glad you did, because I will tell you that people invested in 2011, 2012, whew, man, they made a killing.
Sure did. Yep. Very true. And also, I think something one of my other podcast guests said earlier this week, too, is that if a deal can work today, oh, it's going to be beautiful when the rates start to go
ma'am.
Down. Just beautiful.
Yes, ma'am.
So
we are in agreement there. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, Ken, now for the last part of our show, we do what I call the lightning round questions.
Okay.
So it's just five little questions that I ask all of our guests. Are you ready?
All right. Sure.
All right. So putting business aside, as hard as it is to imagine doing that, what do you actually do for fun? What's a hobby of yours?
Oh, I hang out with my family. My kids are now grown, so I do everything I can to spend time with my kids. We love to go on cruises. We love to, our kids, we took them to Disney a lot growing up. So we'll go back to the Disney resorts. I'm not a park fan, but I do love the resort. So we do Disney, we do cruises. We just spend time with family. That's what I love to do.
Nice. Very good. All right. What is something interesting about you that most people don't know?
Ooh. I don't know. I haven't been bored. All right. Here's one. I'm a licensed pilot. Used to own 3 Cessna Pilot Centers.
Ooh, interesting.
That's something unusual. And I got my license when I was at Deloitte as a CPA. I did it on my lunch hour. Most CPAs don't go out in their lunch hour to get their CPA license, but I did. It's kind of weird, but I did it.
Nice.
It's weird.
That's fun. That's nice. And I would also say most CPAs are very risk averse, and, you know, getting your own pilot license and, you know, flying your own little planes, that's a little risky.
Oh, it was
interesting, Ben.
I encourage everybody to do it. It's really, really an incredible experience.
Nice. Nice. Okay. And now, as far as, you know, just self-development and furthering, you know, your own learning, what book would you recommend investors should definitely include in their library?
Oh, I can't even name just one book. I mean, I'm just constantly reading. I'm into John Maxwell right now. Love his stuff. I've read Cardone's 10X Rule and some of that stuff. I'm a CPA and lender by background, so now I'm trying to figure out the whole marketing sales thing. So that kind of leads you to Cardone. He might know something about that. What else? Stephen Covey's stuff, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I spent my whole life trying to figure out how to be better than I am. So
yeah,
tons of reading.
Fun. Yeah,
it is. Absolutely. It is.
Okay. Well, good, good. And then, you know, one of the things that we talk about on the show, and I always try to close with it, is yes, we love money. We love returns. Yes, we're all trying to build legacies for our families. We all want to be, you know, financially secure, but everything is not about just money, right? It's really about being able to live an extraordinary life. So what is your advice for someone who is focused on building and living an extraordinary life?
Yeah, you know, the reason I got into this business, I was at Deloitte as a CPA at the time when I decided I wanted to get into real estate. And it wasn't about the money. It was, well, of course, it probably was a little bit back then. But what was really important to me, let's be honest, what was really important to me is that, I don't know how much you know about CPAs, but they work really, really hard, really, really long hours. And the thought that I had 2 young children and they were going to grow up and basically have dad working 70, 80 hours a week, that just made me sick to my stomach. I just couldn't imagine that. So that's what drove me to this business. And it's those, see, now I'm older, I'm 58, my kids are grown, you know, life really does change as you grow older. So So now I'm 100% focused on helping other people how to figure out what I've been able to do, right? That's why we have our investor education platform. All that stuff is really important to me because I think, you know, if I can help somebody else, you know, then my, I don't want to call it a legacy because I don't really like that word, but the impact that I have on somebody will last for decades, right? And I remember the people that helped me out early on. I mean, incredibly grateful to everything that they did for me. And that now I want to, I guess, pay it forward, right? That's the term everybody uses, but that's kind of what I'm focused on right now. So I don't know if that was a good answer to your question, but hopefully it did.
Yeah, no, it's a great answer. It's a very, very good answer. All right. And then now, last but not least, if folks want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, go to kripartners.com and figure out if you're, I mean, we do fundraising just like you guys do. Or if you're trying to figure out how to do your own deals, we can help you with both of those. So kripartners.com and check us out and look me up. I'm easy to find on the website.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Ken. I definitely enjoyed it. Very insightful, especially when it comes to Florida markets. And I think just also hopefully reassuring also for people, you know, to kind of be able to hear what's going on behind the scenes, your perspective, my perspective, you know, how those of us really in the thick of it every day, our outlook, you know, I hope is encouraging to listeners. So thank you for taking some time to talk with me today. And for those of you that have invested your time with us today, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, rate, and review the show. Leave us some comments and let us know what you'd like to hear more of. And in the meantime, be bold, be strong, and keep moving forward.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.